Hare Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita, we read that Abrahma Bhavana Loka Punar Abhatanurjana, that in this material world there is inherent suffering everywhere and in everything, because the eternal soul is seeking everlasting pleasure. The soul expects that and really can settle for nothing less. But when that immortal soul identifies itself in this, what Gita calls a yantra, a temporary machine of the physical body and the subtle mental body, we're thinking, this is me. And we're trying to attract people to this misconception. And we are becoming infatuated by other misconceptions in the form of things and people. And it's such an endless cycle. And all solutions to our problems without understanding this basic principle that we are all part and parcel of Krishna, of God. We are all eternal. Our real happiness is in the love between the Atma and the Paramatma, Krishna. Our solutions are like putting some wood in a fire. The fire is hungry. It's yearning for fuel. When you give it fuel, the fire temporarily goes down, but then it flares up as soon as that object is consumed. Prahlad Maharaj tells in the Bhagavatam that the solutions to the problems of this world, without reference to spiritual knowledge, the solutions in due course of time will create more complicated, difficult problems than the original problem. And this we find everywhere. It's nothing new. It's the very basis of suffering. We try to solve our problems by exasperating the problem with so-called solutions. In the chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam of Lord Brahma's prayers, there's that beautiful verse. It ends, Padam Padam Yad Vipadam Natesham Samashitaye Padapalabaklavam. That when one seeks shelter of the lotus feet of Murari, a name of Krishna is Murari, which means he's the killer of the Mura demon. And so oftentimes devotees address Krishna in this way. In the Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna was very confused and perplexed about everything that was happening around him, he was incredibly intelligent, talented, from such a high birth. But the Gita teaches us in this first chapter that whoever we are, whatever we know, we are going to be put into situations that are just beyond ourselves. It may be in the form of disease. It may be in the form of economic disaster. It may be in the form of broken relationships. And again, and it's in the form of frustrated desires. And how we respond to that frustration. The demon of ignorance, forgetfulness of who we really are and what we really want, that cloud that blocks us from our true self-interest, is like a demon. And that mystical cloud of maya or illusion manifests many forms. Lust. Incredible, insatiable passions for pleasure, for profit, adoration, distinction, or the physical experiences of life. Kama krosha, in Gita, it explains that the sinful enemy for all of us is this selfish passion. Kama esha, krodha esha. When it's unfulfilled, we become angry. We make offenses. We act in ways that's just, if we have some decency, we regret it in the future. If we don't have proper decency, then we become so caught up in that anger, it just escalates and escalates into all kinds of other horrible deeds. Lust, anger, envy, arrogance, greed, illusion. These are the demons that are killing the propensity for loving service to the Lord within our hearts. They're all born of avidya, ignorance. So Krishna is Murari because he descends into this world to slay the demons. He slayed so many big demons like Aristasura, Vatsasura, Bakasura, Shishupal, Kamsa, Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, Ravana, Kundakarma. But the reason he kills all these gigantic demons is not only for the purpose of giving facility for the people of this world to actually attain the real aspiration of their desires, but to give hope to all of us that whatever demons are in our hearts, if we turn to Krishna, Krishna can release us, can liberate us from the clutches of illusion. And these histories are full of messages. Because in each one of these avatars, the asuras that were causing so much illusion and corruption in the world were beyond anybody's ability to control. All of these demons that we just named, not only the sages or the rishis or the common people, but even the most powerful demigods could not stand before them. ultimately the only solution was to totally humble themselves and cry out to Krishna. Murari. Hey, Murari. Please kill this demon within myself and make me an instrument of your love within this world rather than an instrument of Maya's envy, pride, and greed. That's essentially our choice. It's a choice that each and every one of us individually and personally must make. Do we want to be instruments of illusion? If we are going to be instruments of illusion, we have many choices within that realm. There's tamaguna, rajaguna, and sattvaguna. We could be instruments of illusion in the mode of ignorance, through intoxication and violence and envy. Or we could be instruments of illusion in the mode of passion, through greed and fruit of activities, trying to get more and more for myself. Or we could be instruments of illusion in the mode of goodness by trying to actually make this world a better place through philanthropy and charity and honesty and truthfulness, but no real conception of what is beyond death and what is the real needs of the soul. Or we could choose to be instruments of Krishna Kripa, Krishna's mercy within this world. Krishna has appeared within his name, Murari. And if we call out for Krishna's names with feeling, the same way the devas and the helpless people cried out when Kamsa or Hiranyakashipu was standing before them, then Krishna will liberate us from those demons within us and make us pure. Those who take shelter of Murari, even the fathomless ocean of complexities of this material existence, it's described to try to liberate oneself from the sufferings of this world is like trying to swim across an ocean. Now, a champion, great swimmer who has trained his body or her body in fitness may be able to go 10 or 20 or even 30 miles farther than you and me. But what difference does it make in the ocean? It's thousands of miles. And the Bhagavatam describes trying to cross this ocean with the help of other people who are covered by the cloud of illusion is like grabbing on to the tail of a dog who appears to be a really good swimmer to cross the ocean. It can give us the false hope. Look at this dog is really swimming good and I'm holding on and I'm not really endeavoring so hard. But you're both going to sink. Another example is trying to take shelter of the philosophies and the sciences and the people, however ornamented they are with degrees and with skills and charisma. It's like trying to cross the ocean by boarding a boat made out of stone. Even if that stone boat has jewels on it and has flags of our nation sailing above it in the wind, still it's stone, it sinks. But if we just take shelter of Murari, then that vast ocean of material illusion is reduced in size to the quantity of water contained in a hoof print of a small calf. Not even a cow. The Srimad Bhagavatam says a calf. They're so little and tiny and small, and calf prints, when you see them, they're like little baby prints. Because Krishna tells us, mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. He's the controller of material existence. Daivi yeshu gunamai mama maya duratyaya. If we surrender to Krishna, then what is impossible becomes possible. The time that we spend by our free will within this world is very much what does determine the nature of our surrender. Surrender is not just coming to Govardhan Hill, doing parikrama, getting a nice good cough and thinking I'm really purified, and then going back to wherever you live and wasting your life. Surrender is a moment-to-moment choice that we all have. And time's running out. Maharaj Parikshit had 7 days to live. And Prabhupada tells us he knew he had for sure 7 days. But there's not a single person in this whole planet Earth that knows for sure that we even have 1 day to live. Padam padam yadvipadam natesham. There's danger at every step. So we come to these holy places for many reasons. We come to realign our priorities in life. What is it that I really want? Who am I? What is the purpose of life? Sanatana Goswami inquired with these questions from Lord Chaitanya. People call me a scholar, and I believe them. I'm such a fool. But I don't know. Who am I? Why am I suffering? What is the purpose of life? Actual human life is to the extent we are living for the purpose of realizing the answers to these questions. And it is true that this world, whoever we are, it's very entangling. Even if you're trying to be nice, there's so many situations beyond our control that can make us really nasty people. Circumstances, anxieties, threats, fears, or just basically apparently good people doing nothing about the real problems. Birth, old age, disease, and death. So it is one of the primary recommendations, or let us say principles, of every great religion, and we're especially speaking about the Vaishnav Dharma, to go to holy places of pilgrimage with holy people, to realign our priorities. And by Krishna's grace, when he really wants to reciprocate with sincere prayers, Or even if your prayers aren't so sincere, Krishna may reciprocate by somehow or other pushing you to become more sincere. Krishna gives us austerities. Those austerities should be welcome. Tapo divyam putraka yenapa. Human life is meant for tapasya, austerity. That means to be willing to endure and welcome and accept inconvenience, difficulty, or even suffering for the higher cause of self-realization. I remember when Srila Prabhupada came to the community I was living in 1976. He sat on his seat. And the first thing he said was he just drove from the airport in a car. He said there was a sign on the way that there was road construction. And there was so much traffic jams because of the road construction. And there was a sign. Prabhupada noted everything from a very, very spiritual perspective. The sign said, temporary inconvenience for permanent convenience. And Prabhupada said, this is the illusion of this world. This is the promise, some temporary inconvenience for a permanent convenience. But actually, in the real sense, that's what spiritual life is for. We accept temporary inconveniences for the purpose of our sadhana, our seva, and it does create a permanent convenience. And then he said, without spiritual knowledge, what is the progress of human society? We judge progress by the evolution of human character. And the highest character is the character Vairagya Vidya Nitya Bhakti Yoga of detachment from selfishness and egoism, knowledge of what is real and what is not real, and the fruit of knowledge and detachment is bhakti, where we act and utilize our body, mind, words, and everything in our facility for seva, for the loving service of the Lord. And then he said, the dog is running on four legs. And man and women are running on four wheels. What is the progress? Recently, I was invited to give a lecture at the Ford Motor Company at their international headquarters in Detroit, in America. And I was thinking of this example. After my lecture, some of them liked the lecture, I guess, so they took me on a tour to show me all the different things they were doing and how they're designing the new cars, and I had to sign vow of secrecy. I can't tell you what I saw. What they're, for the next 10 years and 20 years, the new designs of the cars, and they were showing me how they work. And then they took me on this test drive where they was going, it was going 100 miles per hour, not kilometers. That's about 140 kilometers an hour. And every 3 seconds, he was changing lanes, like. And I was thinking, what am I doing in this? I just came to give a lecture, but they wanted to reciprocate and make me happy, and I just said, all right. They took me in this test car, one of the fastest cars in the world, that's faster than the Ferrari, and he was, and I'm chanting Japa. must say it was some of my more attentive rounds of japa. But unbelievable miles of machines and plants and all of this. And as I'm, you know, seeing it all, and all the billions and billions of dollars put into it, I was just thinking of Srila Prabhupada. When I was just sitting this far away from him when he said, just about 10 feet away, he said, man is running on four legs, man is running on four wheels, dogs on four legs. What is the difference? If only human beings would put so much effort and so much facility and so much brain power and body power and so much time into actually solving the real problems of life. Essentially, we go by our cars, we go by our, Prabhupada called them aeroplanes, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. The mentality of the dog and the mentality of the human is, there's really no difference unless we're trying to find the experience of seva, of unalloyed devotion to the Supreme Lord, the actual solution to the problems of death. We come on to holy places with holy people to remind us of this, to realign our priorities in life, which are inevitably going to be distracted wherever we are. What to speak of living in a house with a family, taking care of children, or children having to deal with parents and brothers and sisters, and then you have to get a job or you're going to school. So many distractions at every step. But if we have strong sadhana and strong association, we could keep that direction. We could keep that connection to Krishna. And coming to holy places really help us to do that. They all, coming to holy place also very much strengthens and revitalizes our faith. Because in the holiest of all holy places, Vrindavan, every single speck of dust, every leaf on every tree, every stone on the mountains or on the ground, the very air that we breathe, whatever is mixed in it, still, the basis of that, it has been absorbing Krishna's eternal lila and absorbing the meditation and the prema, the pure love of all the acharyas and all the saints and great souls over the thousands and thousands of years. And all we have to do is tune into that, and we can get immense benefit. We can get filled with grace. But it's very difficult to tune in to access that grace unless we're in very good association. Jagadananda Pandit, he got angry at Lord Chaitanya because he had a special relationship with the Lord. And he said, I want to go to Vrindavan. And Lord Chaitanya said, you shouldn't go in an angry mood. I'm not angry. But he really wanted to go. So Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, and this is not just an instruction to Jagadananda Pandit, because Srila Prabhupada in the purport quotes from the acharyas, this is a general instruction for all of us, that we should go to a holy place like Vrindavan. Don't stay too long. Because the tendency is we get familiar with the residents there, we get familiar with the dham, we take things for granted. If we take things for granted, we take things to be very ordinary, and we could also make offenses. If we go to a holy place, we should stay in the association of saintly people who give us the vision of the holy dham. So when there are so many people coming together for this purpose, it's like a monsoon shower of blessing and opportunity for us. Whether we come with one or two or three people, or whether we come with 5 or 6,000 people, the idea is we're here for each other. Whatever contribution we make in our sincerity, in our prayer, in our enthusiasm to hear, enthusiasm to chant, enthusiasm to go to these places and pray and beg for mercy, enthusiasm to serve, then we're contributing to an incredible energy that uplifts ourselves and uplifts everyone else. And in that association, we are uplifted. Grateful. Our cooks, Gauranga Prabhu, Radhabalava Prabhu, and so many others. Yesterday we were discussing the pot washers. Today we'll say little something about the cooks. The prasad speaks for itself. There's not that much I could say. But these devotees, they spend months planning the kitchen, planning the menus, planning the bhoga, planning the preparations before the yatra even begins. And what Bamsidhari, who set up all of these railway systems? Huh? Venudhari. Incredible. He's an engineer. Gauranga Prabhu is an IIT engineer. Radhabalava Prabhu is an IIT graduate engineer also. And their pot washer has a master's degree at IIT as an engineer. This is the hierarchy. Those who have bachelor's degrees are the cooks, and those who have master's degrees wash their pots for them. Now, for me, who only has one semester of a junior college, I'm fascinated by watching all this happen. And they're all coming to me for guidance. This is the logic of bhakti. And Govinda Prabhu, if he just glances upon any of them with the dissatisfaction, they tremble. And Govinda Prabhu, did you ever go to college? Somewhere in Belgaum, he learned basic Marathi and all that stuff. But these cooks, Venudhari, yes, he spends so much of his energy creating a railway system. How many of you have seen the kitchen, the railway system they have? And these hoists, these special cranes that are handmade and designed just to lift and move pots, gigantic pots. I was thinking, you know, why be a weightlifter or a mystic yogi who can, you know, do all kinds of mysticism? All you need is this crane. This pot of sambar today, I was seeing, how many gallons is the pot when it's full? nobody wants to tell me. Loudly? ¥700 in one pot. So there's, it's a gigantic pot. And there's one little skinny guy just pulling a little chain. And factually, you know, any of our children could do it. They're just like, just pulling this chain and the pot's going, and then they just push it here and the pot goes, and they put it down here and then a couple people, well, a person just pushes it and it goes down the railway system. Incredible. So much thought, so much devotion, so much dedication. And to cook, what's like 7 or 8 preparations for 5,000 people every lunch? And that's in between breakfast and dinner? And yet when I go to the kitchen, they don't seem stressed out. They seem like they're just... And the ladies from Belgaum, they're making rotis, 10,000 rotis a day. They're just cooking and they're singing and they're smiling and they're happy. And then they sometimes roti, sometimes dosas or other types of preparations. And they're just happy serving. While everyone else is out on parikrama, going from place to place, they're just cooking, cooking, cooking all day, every day. They've come to serve. It's service to eat prasad. It's service to cook prasad. It's service to serve the prasad. Everything is service. It's just a matter of our consciousness. So we come to the holy places to become spiritually surcharged. And in the association of people who are eager to hear, eager to chant, not expecting things for me, but how I can be an instrument to inspire and make others happy and enlightened. That's how we make advancement. If we come to a yatra expecting, what am I going to get out of this? Expecting that I want this, I want that, I want this attention or that attention. We're missing the opportunity. We should come to serve, to be grateful that these people have been spending months preparing these menus and now all of that energy, all of that devotion, all of that surrender and sacrifices in every morsel of this food. Let me be grateful and honor this prasad to my full satisfaction. Now, if you think it's difficult to get resituated in your new rooms between Vrindavan and Govardhan, put yourself in the person who, in the team's position that for so many weeks and weeks and weeks had to arrange all these rooms. They start a year before. Where we're going next year for our Kartik Yatra, we have to start planning the rooms before the end of this yatra. Otherwise it's too late. These people are working for a year. And what to speak of getting the buses and in India, no, you know, whatever people in the West say about India's booming economy, the buses in India are still Indian buses. And the challenges are still the challenges that have always been. They're going through tremendous amount of any anxiety that you have comes upon them. So to just appreciate what so many people are trying to do, just to be grateful, we make great spiritual advancement. And not only that, when we're grateful, we become happy. Gratitude brews happiness. If we're ungrateful, we cannot be happy. Because an ungrateful heart is always expecting something else. Something that is according to my own egoistic conception of what should be. Gratitude is, I'm going to try my best to be an instrument to serve, to absorb myself in Krishna with a grateful heart. And then whatever may come, it's beautiful. Accept it as grace and flow with the current of that grace to Karuna Sindhu, to Krishna, who is an unlimited ocean of love, kindness, and mercy. For many years, Shamdasji, Hare Krishna, Jaisya, Mohanji. For many years, it has been a dream to base our yatra at Govardhan. In Vrindavan, there are so many places, and that's very, very difficult to organize accommodations and a pandal and cooking arrangements and kitchen and everything else. And then we had an idea a couple years ago, half the yatra we should do in Vrindavan and half at Govardhan. And the immediate response was impossible. But I didn't have to say anything in response, because devotees are so well trained, they know how to respond to their own responses. Impossible. And I just sat patiently and they said, but we'll try. And here we are. Some inconvenience, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the inconveniences that I undergo in serving you more, my Lord, are my greatest forms of happiness.